I usually don't make local announcements. Go out to other places, other cities, and far away. But locally, if there are people going to Diablo Canyon this week who need care in the local area for taking care of pets or watering plants, they say they can plan to be arrested. You can call me, and I'll help out if you want in some way. If you don't get back and you're in jail and you need something to take care of in terms of mail or house, I went down there 2 years for the demonstration, but I'm too coward to be locked up right down there in San Luis Obispo right now. I feel what I'm doing here is just as important in getting to the roots of what is happening. You see, if you're fighting the Borman Brotherhood, if you're really fighting an organization of dogs, and I mean dogs, who have been planning killing, to make wars, to have a budget of $1 billion a week of nuclear weapons. That is the budget right now. I heard on KGO coming over here, two men were discussing the Soviet Union and the United States to keep up with each other in terms of nuclear weapons and the machinery to make them and increase the supply is about $1 billion a week, which is $52 billion a year for nothing except to blow up the earth. And you have to go back to the mentality of who were these people that came over here, the rocket scientists, Wernher von Braun and Dornberger, Walter Dornberger, and their 500-600 members from Project Paperclip. They said, if we have the satellites, we can have lasers to come down and scorch the earth. We can instantly kill a single person from up there. We can have war from up there. Whoever has the space controls the world. And it's been a bitter fight not to increase the green belt, to make life better, to have recreation, to have housing, to have health plans. Every big bitter cent is going into this terrible insanity. And I personally feel that the younger people who have the energy to go to Diablo Canyon should also be working in some way along the field that I'm doing, either with me or with other researchers who are doing these things, and maybe protest when there's the World Affairs Council here or meetings of public figures. We should be out there maybe every weekend with signs around the federal building with names of these people so that they know that we know who they are and identify them and ask them either to speak up or explain their links to the World Nazi Organization, link of Richard Nixon to Project Paperclip and the Nazis. I wrote about that in 1972 at the time of Watergate. And Howard Bloom wrote a book, Wanted Search for the Nazis, where he goes into Nikolai Meloxon, Richard Nixon's office in Whittier, an excuse for a dummy front, Western 2. This story of pollution, of ruining the earth and everything around it is more than a single company like Pacific Gas and Electric Company. It is a way, even they are not as bad as the weapon places up and down the coast here and around the country that actually make the bombs and then the ships and so forth. Those are the places that should really be earmarked with handbills and petitions all the time. Places trying to get out electricity, whether it is good or bad, I don't know, and it's on the fault of an earthquake line. I don't like the idea of atomic energy, period, and I think there's solar energy is the way we should go. Ronald Reagan says that's not the way we're going. We're going nuclear and not solar. But these decisions were made a long time ago by people who are crazy, and to get out there and protest them for a single thing is not, again, going to solve the problem. I say one group that saves the whales, and another doesn't like seals, and another one that doesn't like an atomic energy plant. The problem is bigger, and the way that the people in Russia got rid of the czars and the pogroms and the oppression, or had a revolution, was to sit and know the issues, know where they want the money to be, where the production should be in the hands of the people, what they expect from a government, what they want in terms of change. If they went out on the street and sat in front of the Tsar's castle, they were gunned down. It's nice to be visible as a body, but a real revolution takes a lot of hard work at home. And these young people don't have the willingness to sit and discipline themselves to, say, read one book, even as the Marxist, they sat with Karl Marx and read economics. Whether it was the right answer or not, I don't know. But there was a discussion and a discipline in every village and hut. And they had to sit there because they were desperate and against the wall and figure out what move to make together. And to sit on the grounds of a nuclear plant for energy, Pacific Gas and Electric, is okay, but where the weapons are made, Ames Research, and the satellites that are going to scorch the Earth, that's where the demonstration should be, and they really should be there all of the time. Every day, every weekend, as close as you can get to them, and not a one-shot thing once in a while. Well, so much for that. I didn't mean to get off on that subject, but I do feel very badly when I see, as I say, these single issues come up. Our local paper had a full-page ad with the names of about 200 people that I call them the local liberals. I know the names, know some of them personally, or know their names through the years. I've lived up here almost 18 years. And I call them the local libs. And they signed a petition against the right to stop abortions. Men and women signed it, and I guess they're to send it to Washington. And the women should have a right to decide what happens to their body, if it's rape or incest or whatever. They should be able to have the abortion if they want it. And a few people shouldn't determine for them what they should do with their own body. So there was a lot of energy, a lot of money put to full-page ad in the paper this week. But they wouldn't put the same energy into fighting the Bormann Brotherhood or the real threat, because once you get Adolf Hitler and the Fourth Reich into power, they will tell you not only what to do with your body, what to do with your aged parents, what to do with your children if they're deformed, if they're insane, if they have moles on their heads or hands, if they're too fat or thin, if they don't look right, if they're too dark, if they're economically off balance, can't contribute economically, they could put them into slave labor, batch consignments, ship them off to space stations. The system of fascism has no regard for your banking, for your housing, for your transportation, for your health system, for your life, for your money. Fascism is not hard to understand, and it is very clear. It's documented in books and documents of World War II, World War I, the present day, and hearings about who these people are that are making decisions over our lives. So I saw that list, and I think, well, if that much energy could be put into abortions, and then this kind of energy is put at Diablo Canyon, wouldn't it be wonderful if we had that kind of energy combined with people with posters on, let's stop the Bormann Brotherhood, and let's stop the Nazification of America, and name the very Nazis who came from Germany who are making the decisions. They're identifiable, as I say, and I just wish that there was that kind of energy out there today. Now, there are a few articles in the newspaper this week along the lines that I'm talking that are very important. One is the San Francisco Chronicle, the Wall Street Journal, August 29th. Hinckley's dad wants out of oil business. It's no longer Vanderbilt Energy is selling. Vanderbilt is famous because of John Hinckley Jr. Now, the excuse was, in the newspaper, a lack of qualified personnel in the oil industry, and not their family troubles is the reason John W. Hinckley Sr. wants out of the oil and gas drilling business. That's a great excuse, because there's nothing making more profit today than oil and this kind of gas, the industry he's in, gas drilling. Hinckley, president and chairman of Vanderbilt Energy, told shareholders Thursday the firm is for sale. He was confident a satisfactory agreement for a cash tender would be reached. No mention was made of the possible effects of the company on the charges against Hinckley's son, John W. Hinckley Jr., that he attempted to assassinate President Reagan last March. The elder Hinckley, who lives in Colorado, will sell his company because the oil and gas business has been operating at capacity for some time. The April-June quarter brought a net income totaling $260,000, or 7 cents a share, and it goes into the finances of the company. Hinckley said if Vanderbilt fails to reach an agreement with a buyer, the firm would continue to operate and participate in $21 million worth of drilling ventures at a cost of $6 million to the company. Now, I mentioned Vanderbilt Energy and Vanderbilt Resources written up in newspapers as two companies. One could be a dummy front. And I believe that the Hinckley connections to World Vision, to Guatemala, to Nigeria, to George Bush, to John Connally, to Edward Bennett Williams, the attorney for John Hinckley Jr., has more to do with their selling this. I don't think this company, if it was a true oil and gas company, and if this kid wasn't sent in there as an assassin, and the family had been supporting him up to the end when he went to California and then took the bus up to Washington, D.C., and he'd been in Washington, D.C. before. He has one of the most expensive attorneys for organized crime, CIA, Defense Department, the attorney outside of William Casey for the most important cases in the United States. His dad, if he is a CIA front, if they are working with the Defense Department in Cambodia, if they are using their church organizations as fronts, they have to get out because they would be too obvious now, invisible, and they would have to sell it. The whole world would be watching Vanderbilt Energy, and Vanderbilt Energy is for sale. Now, a continuation along that line, because the common denominator of Vanderbilt Energy is, and many things I've talked about, is Edward Bennett Williams, that notorious attorney, and John Connally, and the Texas oil people. There's an article this week, and I'm sure many of you saw it, in the financial sections of your paper. A merger, Occidental Oil seeks to merge with Zapata Oil. Now, this is a $700 million swap of stock that could make Mr. Murdoch, and I've done programs on David R. Murdoch, the firm's largest shareholder. Now, to translate that, in case some of you haven't heard the program in the last few weeks, Occidental Oil is Arm & Hammer Petroleum Company. He also has Love Canal and Chemical Corporations. Arm & Hammer is the United States businessman par excellence with the Soviet Union. He has links. His early Occidental Oil came out of Libya, Gaddafi's Libya. He has strong connections with the Soviet Union at the present time. And Arm & Hammer and the chemical industries, such as the large IG Farbens that are written up in this book on the Bormann taking over of the world and involving chemical and oil companies. Now, Arm & Hammer was merging his meatpacking industry and his other forms, his Iowa beef processors, with David R. Murdoch, in Los Angeles. And I did several broadcasts on David R. Murdoch, a very important person. When Watergate was over, he hired Robert Haldeman. He is close to John Connally and Marvin Davis, who just purchased 20th Century Fox and Pebble Beach, and Frank Sinatra. David Murdoch is a very important person, a Los Angeles financier with links into, I know, the intelligence community, close ties to Goldwater in Arizona. He has the Pacific Holding Company, and I still don't know if that's the Pacific Holding Company that is the same Pacific Holding Company of Nugenhand Bank in Australia with its large combine of CIA narcotics and travel agencies and so forth. I haven't been able to find out if those are the same name for two companies or whether they just have a lot in common. Now, Arm & Hammer is one of the largest financiers in the United States, and working with David Murdoch in Los Angeles with Robert Haldeman and John Connally, and again, Edward Bennett Williams' attorney, Williams represents John Connally, are going to merge with Zapata Oil, and Zapata Oil is George Bush. At the night that Reagan was shot, George Bush, his son, had a date to have dinner with John Hinckley's other son. They were socially compatible. They are from the Houston, Dallas, Fort Worth area, links to the oil engineering industry and to Colorado. There is a combine here that is terribly important. And this week, the idea that George Bush would merge his Zapata Oil with Murdoch and Arm & Hammer is very fascinating, because Bush is a fellow that covered up the murder of Letelier. He was vice president. He's vice president now, but he was director of the CIA and had links with the intelligence community so strong that he was covering up the political assassinations coming out of Chile, Colonial Dignidad, the Nugent-Hahn connections, the heroin traffic connections, George Bush, Zapata Oil out of Texas, combining with Murdoch and Armand Hammer, brings out names that I am actually, I have charts across a dining room table going up and down now that I'm trying to make connections of Gaddafi in Libya with the Borman Brotherhood, with Armand Hammer, the Occidental Petroleum, with the terrorism, with the CIA organizations and Green Berets set over there, with the CIA set up by Hitler in the United States, through Reinhard Gehlen, and Gehlen setting up Nasser and Sadat in Egypt and sending those agents, top Nazis, to set up their governments, and also in Uganda. And now this combine of the oil company, Zapata Oil, which is George Bush's company, with Murdoch, and Murdoch's links to, as I say, to the Hinckley family, to Edward Bennett Williams, to Conley. This is a whole gang that would be dangerously close to a setup to get Reagan. And I believe seriously that more and more is going to come of this combine, and it should be watched very closely. I have an article this week, When the President Comes for Dinner. Maybe you saw it or you didn't see it. And it tells how a dinner was prepared for 1,500 people at Century City, and he didn't eat the dinner. And then there was another special dinner for 1,500 people. It was a steak. But the Secret Service takes his dinner from the main table. This was in the San Francisco Chronicle, and takes 6 or 8 plates and takes them down to the audience and out of the, at random, picks 10 people from the head table and then takes those steaks and trays and mixes them with the audience at the banquets, and special people stand when Ronald Reagan's food is cooked. And the article said that the National Security watches his food and everything he eats. When Reagan is on the road, his valet or the stewards from Air Force One oversee preparation. They know what he likes, but they're guarding against any tampering of his food. They're afraid he'll be poisoned. At the time of Watergate, when Watergate was escalating on CBS News' Face the Nation, this was in April 73, Lowell Weicker from the Senate Committee accused Robert Haldeman, who now works for David Murdoch, of covering up a crime. He said, now the time has come for the Chief of Staff, Haldeman, to step forward and explain. It's absolutely necessary that Haldeman testify to the Select Committee. Did he have knowledge that there was a unit responsible for disruptions and surveillance and actions during the presidential campaign? Of course, Haldeman went to jail for that and for cover-up at Watergate. But Haldeman has been an interesting character and now working for David Murdoch. And Haldeman was overthrowing the government, actually, for his own purposes by allowing these teams to go into the Democratic office and play hanky-panky at the time of Watergate with the electoral process. Jody Jacobs had an article in the LA Times last week, a little name-dropping, she calls it. You already know Armand Hammer. He had a dinner party, and he gave him the 1981 Armand Hammer Award. Mayor Tom Bradley was there, and Hammer's wife. And then it mentions Gabrielle and David Murdoch and Mrs. George Hearst and so forth and so on, the social list at the White House. In the book Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, I looked up Richard Nixon's name, and it refers to the combine in South America, the Nazis, that were very happy to have Nixon and Rebozo's control over Nixon in the White House. On page 275 in the book, it says, the German South American group had direct access to the Nixon White House through their representative in Washington, representatives. And as I told you, Nixon had brought in Nazis after World War II and then helped them get identities and go down to South America as part of the Odessa. This Bormann book says that they had representatives in Washington, and they were proud of the fact that Bibi Rebozo was President Nixon's closest friend, for Rebozo processed millions of their dollars through his Florida bank as part of normal commercial operations. They were also amused and flattered that H.B. Haldeman, Nixon's chief of staff referred to himself as the Barton Borman of the White House. Kind of interesting, I think. This combine of the Murdoch and Arm & Hammer and Zapata Oil is very, very interesting, and I don't know how many of these people will surface in the years to come and influence our politics throughout the state and the country. There was an article in the L.A. Times this week, our candidates are kings made like sandwiches in West Los Angeles. This was an article in the magazine section or Sunday section of the L.A. Times suggesting that presidential kings, governors, congressmen are selected like you order a sandwich. It tells about David Murdoch atop his building in West Los Angeles that I believe Robert Haldeman's father-in-law built for him. And David Murdoch calls in Republicans and looks them over, such as you buy garments at a fashion show and decides which ones are going to run for governor. He selected Mike Curb, of course, for his governor, and who will be the president and so forth. And the article went on to say that this is the way they shopped and got Richard Nixon years ago. And the article then goes on to say that it also ruined the Republican Party, that there was no party, and Nixon was handpicked by the Lincoln Club and the Howard Hughes Organization and Herman Perry from the Bank of America, the aerospace industry, a fellow from Navy Intelligence who was in Long Island working with the Nazis to run against Jerry Voorhees. Murdoch is the kingmaker now in Los Angeles for the Republican Party, and you see your presidents do come from California, Ronald Reagan and Richard Nixon, from this part of the world. And the kings, the kingmakers sit there and measure them and look at them and interview them and decide who is going to run your country way across the nation in New York City or overseas. This is how we decide the political level in this country. It's pathetic, but it's been going on for a long time. I did want to mention a little bit about Christopher Boyce, but I just have a few minutes. Christopher Boyce is getting his MK Ultra program of brainwashing in a federal mental prison. He claimed the reason he left Lompoc prison. He tells why he escaped. It was in the paper last week. He was charged with, convicted with sending a message to the Soviet Union. He worked for a CIA front, the TRW Systems in Redondo Beach. That is a CIA satellite place working for the CIA, and he was supposed to have given information to the Soviet Union. The reason he says he escaped from Lompoc prison was that he was threatened by the Aryan Brotherhood, the Nazi party. The Nazi gang pulled a knife, and they were going to kill him. Why would the Nazis want to kill Christopher Boyce in Lompoc prison? First of all, that's sort of a country club prison. That's the fanciest place where Donald Segretti and the people that get a little slap on the wrist and go and play golf with fairly country club environment here in California. Boyce had disappeared from the prison when the Nazis were after him. He claims in newspaper articles the last 2 weeks that the reason he was giving information to the Soviet Union was that he caught on to the Australian connections of the CIA to overthrowing the government in Australia. There was an article in the New York Post about why he gave away information. It said Boyce said at his trial that he was a pacifist and that he was working at this defense plant, even though he was a pacifist, when he was provoked into his actions when he discovered that the CIA interfered in the affairs of Australia and other allies. And you better believe that. He claimed he had evidence that the CIA disestablished the government of former Australian Prime Minister Gough Whitlam. And there are CIA documents to prove how the administration said, go after Whitlam, we can't have Whitlam, and how they had deceived Whitlam about the operations and about the CIA operations at Pine Gap in Central Australia. A listener from New York sent me this article, August the 10th, 1981, from the New York Post, that he fled to Australia and was down in Sydney, Australia, and then had gone to South Africa and then later came up to the northern area where he had lots of money, thousands of dollars of money, $6,000-$7,000, bought a boat and was taking airplane lessons and was soon ready to fly away again. Now, this last week, the charges were dropped against Boyce. In a surprise move, the U.S. Attorney's Office said the complaint against spy Christopher Boyce was dismissed last Monday, and they will soon return him to the federal prison. He's in a mind control center now, and Christopher Boyce was attacked, according to his attorneys, by Nazis inside the prison. Now, anybody who catches on to the Mormon Brotherhood, according to this book, who is fingering them or has pieces of the web that are in the way of their operations is murdered. Now, if this is a worldwide organization that has gone on since the end of World War II and firmly entrenched, that would explain, as I said at the beginning of this program, studying what I called Murderville USA or worldwide murder, or the assassination teams that were set up by the OSS and with the permission of the OSS and the governments in Italy at the end of World War II, described in Permindex and described in the documents about Michael Sindona that I have here, and the Grand Dragon, the group, the Masons in Italy, their counterpart in the United States, the Galen Brotherhood has Licio Gelli in Italy, and had Reinhardt Galen in the United States, and then they linked directly to Martin Bormann. Now, I just got this book on Bormann, and I'm going to study it very carefully. Then I'm going back again and read my books on Reinhardt Galen. I've been very aware of these interlocking connections for, as I say, for 16 years. I got my Warren Commission hearings in 1964 as a Christmas present from my husband, and I began to read the Warren Commission hearings. And the Defense Department and the Nazi connections were apparent to me that as far back as 1964. Now, how much control does the Bormann Brotherhood have over the news media, over investigating committees? How bad is it? Well, for 17 years, almost every major researcher has negated the role of the Nazis and the oil people and the Christian Church, the anti-Catholic element in the assassinations. Was it intentional, or are they part of the organization? We'll never know how many members there are to the organization if it's worldwide. We only know the effect it has on us every day, and it certainly does control what we do every day. Well, my time is up now. We'll be doing more on these interlocking links in the weeks to come. Get that book on Bormann, Nazi in Exile. And next week, we'll put a few more of these pieces together and try to understand what's happened to this country and to the world since 1943, 1944, when they retrenched to take over the world again. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel. You take care, and I'll be back with you next week.
This has been World Watchers International.